You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All the way from Costa Rica, we have Martin, who is based in California, but watched the Palace game in Costa Rica. He said we had a good spell in the second half, ahead of the goal, and then Palace did a better job of minimising Gibbs White's effectiveness. Agree with you there. Martin was also marvelling at how brilliant Chris Wood's goal was, and it was a wonderful goal. We have Dr. Will, who was off to South Africa for 10 days. He mentioned to me and Matt in our little WhatsApp group, where he's the marriage counsellor between the two of us, how he's going to try and watch the Fulham game on the plane. What an absolute legend, Will, in South Africa. And speaking of Forest All Over the World, we have a Forest All Over the World guest coming in for our Forest All Over the World series to talk a bit about the Fulham game, what happened in the Palace game, and everything else in between. Here's our Australian correspondent, Mark, a wonderful Forest All Over the World guest filling in for Matt, who has inexplicably let me down again. The famous phrase goes, all the way from Australia. I think you're about 10 or 12 hours ahead of me. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good, yeah. It's almost 10:30 in the evening. Going very well. Nice Easter, and pretty excited to see what happens tomorrow with the game.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game. Fulham are tougher than Palace, and we only managed to get a draw at that game on Saturday. Where were you watching the Palace game, by the way? Down there, is it Melbourne you were?
No, I'm in Albany, which is in Western Australia. So we're about 5 hours south of Perth, so pretty remote. But I was at home. I've got a nice little theatre room that I watch the games in, and I stayed up, and I messaged you at halftime, unsure as to why I would have stayed up after what we'd seen. And then it got a lot better, which was good. So yeah, just watched it at home, that one.
Yeah, no, first of all, apologies. I know where you are because you've been on the podcast before and you've said the exact same thing, but I keep thinking Melbourne in my head. Maybe it's because all the Irish have flocked down to Melbourne. So you're near Perth. The game itself at halftime, you're right. Like, you messaged me, and I was, to be honest, I was pretty restrained talking to you, but I was spitting venom at halftime in all my other WhatsApp groups. I was absolutely fuming with the situation because it just felt like we weren't brave enough, and it was much improved second half. Did you feel like Nuno got the team selection wrong, as most people have already spoke about to this point?
Yeah, I'm not confident in his confidence in that he knows what his best team is. I think it's each game there's a bit of a shock that comes up in the lineup. But, you know, I still have the faith that the guys who are on the park can do the job. And the first half was just very disappointing, you know. Like, it really, after the international break, I thought they'd come out and really hit the ground running. But it was pretty woeful. I was pretty happy to get into halftime only being a goal down, so.
Yeah, it wasn't spectacular by any stretch of the means, particularly considering the crowd were spectacular. You know, we had a lot of pressure. We had a lot of things happen over the course of the last couple of weeks with the -4. We're all over the news. and the fans really did rally. Forza did a great display, the City Ground. It just felt like the fans had done everything they possibly could to get this team going, and they'd kind of let us down that first half. I suppose the thing is, Palace were kind of there for the taking. We say that about every single team we play and don't beat, but they were. But they just had a better game plan than us coming out the blocks. I felt like they sat off us, kept in their shape, and then broke at will. Their first goal was really well worked. It was a cutting pass through the middle from Lerma to Eze and then Mateta. And then Eze had another chance, which was a big save from Sells first half. What did you think of Sangare getting taken off at halftime? You mentioned he's a bit of a scapegoat at this point in proceedings. I have a slightly different point of view. Go ahead with yours.
Yeah, look, I think if you look over the past 12 months, there's been players that have fallen out of favour. And it wasn't too long ago that Chris Wood was a waste of money. And why'd we sign Chris Wood and shoot ahead within 12 months? And he's looking like he could be the saviour for our season. So Sangare, going away on international duty for as long as he did and coming back injured, it's not been an ideal season for him. And I know it's probably not everyone's take on it, but I think stick with him. I think he is going to come through and show his class. But I understand as the games trickle down, people really want a more of a guarantee, more of someone solid in there who they know what they're going to get. And unfortunately, he's not giving that at the moment. But I think there's more to come. Whether he stays in the lineup for tomorrow, it's Nuno, so who knows? He very well could be. I guess my take on that one is I think he is going to come good. I would sit with him for another couple of games. And it was good to see Gio Reyna come in and do what he did as well. So I still think there's enough room, enough time for a couple of these players to play a really big role in keeping us up.
Yeah. Absolutely. The problem I have is, right, and I was on another podcast at Forest Focus on Saturday, and I criticised heavily Sangare because my issue with it is it's not a Sangare versus Yates thing for me. For me, it's a Sangare has a higher ceiling than Ryan Yates, and everyone knows that. So we expect a lot more from him, and we're not seeing it. Now, for whatever reason, throughout the course of the season, AFCON injuries, not getting a run on the team early on in the season, for whatever reason, he hasn't managed to get a run of games together. And I think I'm a very big believer in playing players into form, but I just don't know that we have time for that now. The real key to the midfield right now is Dominguez for me, because anytime Dominguez plays either side of Ryan Yates and Sangare, I believe that those two end up doing a little bit better in each game. You look at Sangare, I think Sangare, his best game was against Newcastle, maybe West Ham when we lost away, or maybe even the Aston Villa game at home. And I think one or two of those games he was alongside Dominguez, I might be wrong. Yates was alongside Dominguez in one of his best games, which was against Man United. I think Dominguez is kind of the key that sort of unlocks it all, and it's just whether who's going to play next to him. But I just believe that Sangare's ceiling is so much higher than what we're seeing. That's why everyone's kind of really disappointed, and we really do need him now. So we'll talk about lineups later, and we'll talk about what your lineup is and what my lineup is, and we'll go through that. But I think that's kind of the crux of the argument. But it's interesting to see differing opinions on sort of some people thinking he's being a bit scapegoated. Other people, like myself, just I was all for Sangare up until last Saturday, and then it sort of fell apart for me at halftime. I was very reactive. But yeah, I'm not sure. We'll see in the lineups later where we go with it. Overall, is it a bad point, the Palace game? Is it a bad result? Is it a good result? Is it a nothing result? What are your thoughts?
I think getting to halftime on Saturday night and seeing what was happening with Luton, it just felt like everything was going against us again. And some of the opportunities Spurs had to put Luton away, that, you know, hitting both uprights and the ball not quite making it over the line by centimetres. To be honest, I was quite happy to get that point. And without Sells making a couple of saves, it could have been doom and gloom again in another week of people really down because we got nothing and we should have been able to get something out of the game. So, yeah, it was as cliche as it is, a game of two halves, and we probably only deserved a point at the end of the day. So to get that and to put us above Luton, even though on goal difference, I think we've got maybe three goals the better at this stage, it's going to come down to one or two points at the end of the season. So that could be huge, you know, as much as it hurt not taking the win against Luton, to still make progress and to get a point back on them with the deduction as well. And who knows what's going to happen in the future with the appeal. But at this stage, yeah, huge point, I think.
Yeah, the thing is, that's kind of very much where I sit. I'm obviously disappointed we didn't win. There was a lot of disappointment with the fans because they were kind of expecting that win, and I knew that going into the game. But overall, if we're at halftime and we're 4 points adrift at Luton at halftime, we're losing the Palace game, we're playing awful. Luton are 1-0 up away at Spurs. Everton, I think, were within striking distance of Bournemouth. They were 1-1 at some stage in the game. Even Sheffield United were winning 3-1 at Fulham until they bottled it. Burnley were in the game with Chelsea before they got that red card. I think they ended up getting that draw. But for us, we were looking like it was going to be a really bad weekend. So to come out the back end of the weekend, a point gained on the team around us and a point gained on some other teams around us, I think overall is, you know, a good rub of the green for us for a change. So, yeah, I'm with you there. Coming into this Fulham game now, these two home games we had earmarked as games that we need to take points from. Do you believe that this is a must-win game, or would you be... Now, Luton go away to Arsenal. Arsenal should do the business there, right? We would say should, you never know. Do you believe that, like, a point gained in this Fulham game is a positive point again? Or are you thinking we have to start picking up wins here to get ourselves out of this?
I think to feel a lot more comfortable and to not go through each week as nervous as I currently feel and as the rest of the supporters feel, a win is huge. But I still think any points, if we keep gathering points and Luton aren't doing the same, it's, in I guess in a positive sense, it's better than losing, isn't it? So, and we haven't really done much this season to fill ourselves with confidence. So at this stage, 3 points would be amazing. But I'd take a point. If somebody said to me right now, would you take a point? Absolutely.
Yeah, to be honest, I would as well. I think Fulham are a better side than us. They're hovering between sort of like 8th and 12th for the season. And like they've just as a team and as a unit, They seem to improve each year on year. Silva's a good manager. They've got some really talented players, Paulinho, Pereira. Their wing-backs, Castagne and Robinson, seem to be doing damage in the overlap as well. I think that they're a really solid side. This new Muniz guy has come in, is scoring goals for fun. I think that they're a really, really good team, and if we took a point from that with perspective, it's positive, and it just keeps us ticking over. I suppose the real question I have about coming into this game and even the next run of games is, what is your overall sense with how Forest are being portrayed by other clubs and other teams? Because I'm like, I know we had these conversations the last couple of weeks about PSR. I don't want to get into that, but more like, I feel like it's just, we've become the underdogs again. Everyone's against us, you know?
Yeah, look, I think between us and Luton, I think Luton are the team that are gathering a bit of support where they've come from and how they've gone this season. But yeah, I think we can use that though, you know, when the world's against you and when everyone seems to, you know, referees and all sorts, whatever's gone wrong this season, because it's been like a soap opera at times, use it, you know. Nuno should be using it. Like, these are the things that can really give us that us against the world sort of feeling. And I guess I felt that on the weekend with an example like Ryan Yates getting the ball in the edge of the box. And just at that stage, I think the crowd and everyone watching was thinking, put your foot through it, have a go. It's the worst that can happen. But he's looking wide. And I think there's a confidence factor there where a lot of these guys, you know, they know the crowd's behind them. And I don't believe that, you know, you often hear people saying, oh, they're not putting in the effort in this and they're not, their heart's not in it. I 100% believe they're in it, particularly someone like a Sangare. But there's a lot of confidence that they don't have at the moment. So I'd be using it, yeah. Like, us against the world, you know, this is what's happening. This is all that's gone wrong this season. Let's stick it to them and let's stay up and build on that for next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that even last season, we used that sort of, oh, they signed all these players. We use that to our benefit. The thing is, it's funny the narrative, how the narrative switches, because last year everyone said, oh, they signed all these players. That will never work. Now that it's worked, they're like, well, you went mad signing all those players. You should be punished for it. It's kind of like, anything goes with other opposition teams. I do it as well. Like, I mean, yesterday I had a big rant. I did my top 10 least favorite teams, and we'll do that on this podcast with Matt at some stage. And it was quite funny the way in which I was justifying my hatred for different teams. But I do feel like you're right. There's a confidence element to it. Ryan Yates yesterday was on the edge of the box a couple of times. First half, could have put his foot through it. He shot from distance plenty when he was in the Championship. I know it's a different ballgame in the Premier League, but there was no pressure around him. He could have still got a shot off and got it on target. And I wonder, is this stuff off the pitch sort of feeding into the players and their confidence? It must be. They're not robots. But yeah, the narrative certainly has twisted us to be the underdog team that everyone seems to be rallying against for some reason. This Fulham game, lineups-wise, we expect to see something different, right? We expect to see Nuno switch it up because it didn't work on Saturday. I know it's a different team and a different strategy. Maybe he twists again and goes rolls the dice again. But what would your starting lineup for this team from back to front be, going from goalkeeper? If we were playing, I imagine we'll play the 4-2-3-1. What would your starting lineup be here? Because I imagine there's a couple of changes in it.
Yeah, look, before I do that, I was looking online before we came on and saw that Fulham have basically more goals per game against Forest than any other Premier League team. So I think going into it, there's going to be goals. So Jesus. It's going to be, I think it'll be a bit of a shootout. They've won the past three against us. And without Taiwo, I think we're going to rely heavily on Chris Wood. So I think for me, at the back, I'd stick with Aina and Nico, who has been phenomenal, like just come on leaps and bounds. And in the middle, obviously Murillo, and then I would actually go Amabamadeli. I didn't see an issue with that combo that was working, you know?
It was decent. They've conceded probably one goal a game most games that they've played together, like in the Premier League. I think they've done well. Yes, they're young, but like pace from Fulham, like that end, we're gonna get caught out if we don't do it. Do you know what I mean? If we'll get caught out from their pace and their front line. So I agree with that. Sorry, carry on.
No, you're right. But in terms of that, Felipe last season was, you know, amazing, and without him, we may not have stayed up, but. I do think it's probably the right time for him to be used sparingly, particularly as we go into the end of the season. And as I said, Amabamadeli, great. Like, yeah, really, really like him as a player and hopefully sticks around for a long time. In the middle of the park, no surprise, I would be looking at keeping Sangare in there. I would play him with Dominguez. The work rate of Dominguez, I think, is something that we definitely need. So moving up the park, you know, Chris Wood is the focal point that I think Nico needs to find, Aina needs to find. There needs to be more put in there and let the big guy, you know, do what he does. He's phenomenal with his head. Morgan Gibbs-White in that the second half on the weekend was like a breath of fresh air. There was something different, a bit of freedom. And Hudson-Odoi as well seems to be in a good vein of form as well. Probably the one I'm a bit unsure of at the moment is Elanga, and whether he starts or whether he does play as an impact player off the bench. I'd be interested to find out what you think about that.
What would you do? Would you start Elanga with Gibbs-White and Hudson-Odoi in that three, or would you go Origi again?
What about a Reina?
You could. Would you put him wide though? Because that's it. So you have Hudson-Odoi on one side. Would you then have Gibbs-White in the number 10 in the middle? And then you're saying put Reina wide? Because I think what everyone's suggesting, and I'm probably going to suggest it as well, is that Reina goes at the 10 and Gibbs-White drops back to the 8. But yeah, I would put Elanga in just in terms of pace. But that's just me. Look, we'll get to my team. We're talking about your team here.
I think Elanga with the pace in particular, I guess as the game goes on, there's a few heavy legs at the back and he can really take advantage of that. But I guess watching throughout the season, he's done some incredible things, but he's also drifted out of games as well. So I don't know. It's a tricky one. But Gio Reyna just seemed to have that creativity as well. And looking at his role with his national side, he just seems to be hitting his straps at the right time. So I don't know in terms of whether they fit him into the starting 11, but he's definitely got to play a big part. I think he's earned that just from the weekend.
Yeah, no, he was, and to be fair, I thought he was a little rusty when he came on in terms of like his touch and stuff, but overall, he had a good introduction and did reasonably well. And I think he was doing things like finding pockets of space really well along that middle of the park section and interchanging with Gibbs White a lot. I thought that was the key for me. I was like, right, this is mixing it up a bit and getting Palace out of their shape and keeping them guessing, which is just sort of simple stuff that you don't think about. You only really tend to think about the stuff when they're on the ball. But I thought he did really well. Notice how you didn't even mention the goalkeeper, because we know we're going to play Matt Sells. It's certainly not going to be Turner or Blachowicz.
Well, that's something I made in my notes there. That was, you know, for the majority of this season, you know, and I listened to lots of other podcasts and so on. And that topic was, you know, huge. And it was only quite recently until we got Sells that changed. But now that he had a great game on the weekend, it was like, nah, yeah, that's fine. We've forgotten about that. Where's our focus? And I just think he's been amazing. And he came in, he would have come in under huge pressure. He would have known what had happened with the previous keepers. For him to come in and on the weekend keep us in the game, because as they just seem to be on a different level, and for Sells to pull off those saves, I don't think he's getting enough credit, to be fair.
No, and you're right. I think you're right as well, because that first save, if you watch it from behind the goal, as Eze gets cut through, it's not the greatest effort from Eze, but he lifts it up enough, not around the keeper, but sort of straight at the keeper enough that if that hits Sells' arm, it generally would either ricochet into the path of Mateta and be finished, or it would go over him into the net. But Sells sort of stretched his arm close to his body and pushed his arm forwards and knocked it away enough that it bounced and spun off to Mateta, and he couldn't get the angle because of it. So it's just one of those simple things, but it's not simple, you know. I thought it was a brilliant save, and I thought Sells was, all things considered, really calm and has been calm and under the pressure, you say, since he's been in. Right, I'll do my team really quick for just so we can get it over with, okay? I think if I was to do my team, pretty straightforward, it would be Sells in goals. Omobamadeli Murillo as a back pairing, I agree with that. I think we're going to need that athleticism for Fulham. Aina and Williams, definitely. You know, Toflo's done well, but Aina's the best fullback we have, in my opinion. With me, I'm kind of thinking of experimenting, being a bit braver and dropping Gibbs White into an eight initially for the start of the game and having him alongside Dominguez. Now, I know that we lose a six in there somewhere because Sangare and Yates not playing means that we lose a six. But that's what I do. I want to be brave from the off and take it to Fulham, because if we sit back off them, I think they'll break us down. I do. I just don't. I think Fulham are a better team than us. And if we sit back off them and try and squeeze the play, I think eventually they will break us down. They've done it the last three times, as you mentioned before. I think put Rain in the 10, start him there, see what he's made of, and give him the option. Then we have players off the bench. Sangare might feel the pressure off him if he comes on off the bench a little bit. Yates is a good off the bench impact player, and then Origi is a better impact player than starter, in my opinion. And then play Elanga on the right, Callum Hudson-Odoi on the left, Wood up top, and just try and win the game. Just try and win the game, and if they end up scoring, we may score as many of them and get a draw as a result. But that would be my opinion, is to be brave and bold and kind of go for it. But is it too bold to do that? Gibbs White in the eight?
No. I think now's the time to take those risks. I think if we take a couple of risks, we can get that reward. They are coming in this season with two away wins for the season, Fulham. Even though they're sitting on 39 points, they haven't done super well away from home. So looking up on Bolly, who is possibly going to have a fitness test. Would you bring him back in if he was fit? Yeah.
If Bolly was fit, I would bring him back in. I think that him and Murillo are the best combination. Omar Bamadeli would be my second choice if Bolly's out. And Felipe maybe off the bench late on if we need him. But for me, yeah, I think if Bolly is there, if Bolly's available, definitely. I would play Bolly ops alongside Murillo. So yeah, I mean, I think they might save him for Spurs, but yeah, I would definitely bring him in. 100%. I think he's been really good even ever since he came to the club, to be honest.
Look, while we're on the topic, I guess in my own interest as well, Taiwo seems to be an unknown but serious injury. What's the reason why? I think why haven't the club come out and stated what the injury is? Is that a bit of mock?
I heard that it was a similar injury to the one he had before. That's what I heard. Now I don't know anything. Every time Taiwo gets injured, which has been quite a few times since he's been with us, it always seems to be shrouded in mystery as to the actual timeline. But my opinion is that Taiwo will probably not be back till late April, early May. So I think, you know, and also he'll come back as a substitute. I don't think he'll come straight back. So I think it's probably a similar injury to the one he had before, but I'm not sure exactly what it is or the timeline. And I wouldn't rush him back. I'd hold him off for the last three or four games of the season. You know, that's like just keep playing Wood until, you know, and hopefully Wood stays fit. Obviously, he had a small injury a few weeks ago. So keep playing Wood and here we go. I don't know what the timeline of Taiwo is. And if anyone has any inside info, please fire it through. But I would start Taiwo if he came back. Even with Wood in this form, I would start Taiwo immediately just because of the nature of the kind of player he is and what he offers other than just goals. But yeah, listen, where are you watching the Fulham game, by the way, Mark? Where are you going to be watching it? Are you going to have a chance to? I know you're driving off tomorrow morning early with your young lads. Are you going to get a chance to watch the game later on? What time will it be when it's on, actually? It'll be in mid-morning, won't it? Like 4 a.m. or something?
Yeah, mid-early morning. So probably huddled over my phone in the dark, I'd say. We're travelling to Esperance, which is a lovely part of Western Australia. And yeah, so I'll be watching there and hopefully seeing a decent performance and a good result.
Brilliant. That's class. And tell me this. What is your score prediction for the game? Do you believe that we have enough to win this? Do you believe a draw? Do you think Fulham are too good for us, too well cohesive a team?
Oh, it's a bit of head versus heart, isn't it, really? Like, as a loving the club, I want to think the best. But I think based on current form and where we're at, I think it's going to be a 2-2 draw. I think we'll put in a decent performance. I'd be happy with a point. I'd be over the moon with a win. But yeah, I don't know. This season's one of those seasons where just every game seems to have its own little storyline. And I really don't know that. I don't know what team's going to turn up, literally, in terms of Nuno's lineups, but also the form we're going to be in. A better performance than the last game against Fulham, for sure. But yeah, I think 2-2.
You know,
what about you?
Oh, God. Well, I'm just going to go for it. I think we're going to win 3-1. I have to believe that this team is capable. I have to believe that this team is capable of more than they're showing us. I have to believe that we can do what we did against West Ham a few weeks ago. I have to believe that we're capable of winning another game soon, because it feels like every single game that goes by, we're less capable of winning, but I have to believe we are. So I'm going to say 3-1 because I want us to come out the blocks and get two early goals and be 2-0 up at half time and then try and like sort of extinguish the flame of Fulham. That's what I have to go for, and I'm going to believe it. So I'm going with 3-1. I would take a point, much to Matt's dismay. Matt would hate me for that, but he'll call me a fence sitter and tell me I'm backtracking, but I'll take a point. But I'm going with 3-1, and I'm going to give the goal scorers. I'm going to say Gibbs White's going to score 2, and I think that Callum Hudson-Odoi will get the other. That's what I'm going with. If you were goal scorers, who would you go for?
Jeez, you know, I would love a start for Sangare and a goal for Sangare. Wouldn't that just be amazing?
Oh man, can you imagine Sangare came in and score? Can you imagine he scored 2 goals from distance and won us the game? Now that would be a redemption story if ever I heard one. That'd be class, because he can shoot from distance from what we've seen in the highlight reels. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I actually think if it's two for us, I think it'll be Gibbs White and Hudson-Odoi. He looked great on the weekend. I think there's a goal in him tomorrow night.
Yeah, he looked brilliant. He was doubled up quite a lot on that left-hand side, I think he was. So, yeah, he did look really good. Right, before we get out of here, give me your red-hot take, because you messaged me a red-hot take there earlier. I want to hear it. I'll give you mine, and then we'll get the hell out of here, all right? What is your Forest all over red-hot take?
All right, here's my red-hot take. So, throughout the season, I feel like Murillo's been hinting and promising and giving us a taste of what could happen in the future. I think it'll come down to the final game of the season. I think we'll survive with a goal from Murillo. I think it'll be his one and only goal. He'll be sold off to another club in the summer, and this will be the way he'll be remembered. He'll score the winner, keep us up, and everyone will be happy again, hopefully.
That's wonderful. It's kind of like shades of Leeds staying up a couple of seasons ago. I think Rafinha was the hero and then they sold him off to Barcelona. Yeah, that's very... I love that. I love the idea of that. My red hot take is that Burnley will finish above Luton this season and potentially survive. They potentially survive. I could see Everton and Luton go down. Now, at the beginning of the season, I said my red hot take was Luton, Burnley and Sheffield United will all go down. And that's been a pretty good one. That's not really a red hot take. As Matt said to me, it was a lukewarm hot take because... obviously, it's very obvious, right? But my red hot take is that Burnley might end up finishing above Luton this season, one way or another. Thank you for coming on and being the Australian correspondent. I really appreciate it. It's late over there with you. It's really, it was last minute. You're filling in for the Matt who has let me down again. And I do appreciate it. This is the Forest All Over the World podcast. So to have you on from Australia is pretty cool. And you'll be on again.
Yeah, look, I love listening to you guys. I love the banter between the two of you, and it's a privilege to be on. Before I go, just a quick, a shout-out. There's a couple of groups I'm part of on Facebook, the Australian Supporters Group for Forest, and there's the Perth Forest Group as well on Facebook. So hello to those guys if they're listening. Hopefully, we're going to have a decent result tomorrow.
That's brilliant. Yeah, big shout out to the Perth Supporters Group and the Australian Supporters Group as well,
yeah,
I think.
Australian Supporters Group. Yeah.
We had someone, Glenn, on, I think, in one of the very first episodes that we did, first four episodes, we had Glenn on from Australia, I think, and I think he's part of that group. So big shout out to him. Big shout out to those two Forest fan groups, because it's the Forest All Over the World podcast. Follow us at Forest All Over on Instagram or at NFFC All Over on Twitter. Do you know the rest of this, Mark? Maybe you can fill in from at... alternatively, go to forestallover.com. Do you want to do it? No, you don't want to do it.
I'm lost. That does fill in for Matt a little bit, doesn't it? Sometimes he's not quite sure what to do.
Sometimes I get Matt to do it, but he doesn't really remember what our platforms are or where we are. So, no, you're all good. Thanks a million for jumping on. And... we'll see you later.
Catch you later. See ya.